So good afternoon and welcome. My name is Kara Stark and I'm a curatorial assistant in the Department of Media here at the Museum of Modern Art. And together with Klaus Biesenbach, who's the chief curator of the Department of Media, and Roxana Markoch, who's a curator in the Department of Photography, we work together on the exhibition Olafur Eliasson, Take Your Time, Olafur Eliasson. Take Your Time is a survey exhibition of the Danish-Icelandic artist Olafur Eliasson. This exhibition originated at the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art and was curated there by Madeline Grinstein. The artist, however, had long-standing relationships with both curators here, and as such, they decided to work together on developing an exhibition that really suited the environment here and suited the space as well. So the exhibition is 38 works chosen from hundreds of photographs, installations, projections, sculptures that he's made throughout his career. The exhibition is both on view here at MoMA as well as PS1 Contemporary Art Center. And I really want to emphasize that both venues are part of one show. They both really shed light on different elements of his practice. And so I encourage you to see both halves of this one show. Olafur was born in 1967 in Copenhagen, Denmark, and he was raised in Denmark and traveled quite a bit to Iceland, where his family was from. He went to art school and studied at the Royal Danish Academy of Fine Arts in Copenhagen between 1989 and 1995. And during that time, he was greatly influenced by California light and space artists from the 1960s and 70s, including James Turrell and Robert Irwin. His earliest work in the show, which dates to 1991, is titled Wannabe, and I'll show you some images of that in a little while. That was actually made while he was an art student. So the exhibition itself contains works from 1991 to the present. You may have heard Olafur's name quite a bit in the recent past. In the winter of 2003, 2 million visitors went to the Tate Modern in London to see his work, The Weather Project. This was in the Turbine Hall there. And I'll describe what you're seeing. He basically created an illusion of the sun on the far wall by putting mirrors on the ceiling of the Turbine Hall and creating a semicircle out of yellow lights that had a film over them. And so when the mirror, with the mirror image of those lights, it became a complete circle. And there was a bit of haze in the room as well, so it looked like a sun that was either rising or setting. Recreating nature in the museum or gallery is a really important practice for Olafur. And you'll note that his interest in nature and elements quite a bit as we discuss several of the works in the show. Even more recently, you may have heard Olafur's name mentioned in conjunction with the New York City Waterfalls Project. This will be happening this summer. It's in the East River. And he'll be creating 490 to 120 foot tall waterfalls in the river. Both of these elements, both the sun setting and the waterfalls, tie very closely into his practice. So what I'd like to do now is take you on a walkthrough of the exhibition via these slides. The first slide is actually not an artwork, but rather an image of his studio. Olafur's studio consists of roughly 40 people, and they range from designers and architects to scientists and art historians, as well as one chef to make sure that they're all fed. And the environment is really intensely collaborative. They work very closely. There are no titles. They're really engaging in a practice that's been described as akin to an architectural studio or a scientific laboratory for ideas and creation. The exhibition here at MoMA begins on the second floor in the atrium with the work Ventilator from 1997. This image is actually the first installation in 1998 at the Berlin Biennial. Basically, this work consists of a fan that is suspended from the ceiling via a wire, and it flies around of its own accord. At times it goes very fast, spinning through the atrium. At other times it seems to slow down. But nevertheless, it keeps going in different changing arcs. In some of the earlier installations, such as this, the fan was actually at waist level, so you really had to dodge this work of art. Here, we've put it at just over 8 feet, so it's a little less threatening. Though, nevertheless, I do see visitors in there who duck when it comes by, and then there are other people who sort of lean back their heads and just let the breeze pass them by. This is another image of its installation. Actually, I don't know where this site is in particular. The previous one was in Berlin, though. The exhibition continues on the third floor, and as you enter the third floor, you'll find you're already in an artwork. The installation is titled Room for One Color. It's from 1997. And the room is made up of yellow monochromatic light bulbs that are the sole light source in that room. And the light bulbs emit a light at such a narrow frequency that they affect your color perception. So what you end up seeing is just yellow or shades of black and white. You can no longer see your red shirt or blue shoes. When you look beyond the space, out a door, what you'll see is there's a purple hue to everything else beyond the space. By beginning the exhibition with a work that so dramatically affects our eyes' perception, the artists and curators were hoping to prompt a deeper engagement with the art in a realization that the artwork is dependent upon you, the viewer. Your eyes and mind make up a critical part of Olafur's work and the opportunity to really complete the experience. And his works rely heavily upon this relationship between the object and the perceiver. Ultimately, he's trying to promote a very active engagement with the art in this way. In 2001, the museum held a projects exhibition here of Olafur's work titled Seeing Yourself Sensing. And I think that, those words are really integral to his practice as well. It consisted of thin strips of mirrors that were placed throughout the first and second floor. And as you walked past, you would see your reflection and you'd see yourself engaging in this space where you're meant to be looking at art. This is another image of Room for One Color. This piece is titled I Only See Things When They Move. It's from 2004. It's created from a center sculptural piece that consists of 30 glass panels, color-filtered glass panels. And these are all attached to the ceiling via thin thread, and they're all on their own motor. And what happens is they very slowly rotate. At the center of all of these glass pieces, there's a light source that projects out through these pieces of glass. So what happens is the results are these shifting bands of color on the surrounding walls. It's sort of like entering into a kaleidoscope. And as you stand there, you may see a single shadow, as this person does. At other times, you may see up to 4 or 5 shadows that overlap, and it has to do with how the light is projecting out through the glass. The work is actually installed in what is our architecture and design gallery space. And the chief curator of our architecture and design department, Barry Bergdahl, was very interested in Olafur's work and practice. And together with the artists and curators, he thought a lot about adding a work in that space that would make the third floor complete with his work. They considered a lot of options, including architectural models and drawings that Olafur has worked on, as he has worked in that nature. However, what they ended up choosing was something that you may find a little surprising for an architectural space. However, what this piece ultimately prompts is you looking at the space. You're looking at the walls, you're looking at these colors on the walls. And so what they wanted to do is maybe engage the space in a different way and hopefully encourage people to think about architecture, color, and space together. This is another image, this piece. This is a different installation as well. Unfortunately, we don't have installation shots from here yet. So as you proceed down the third floor hallway towards the special exhibitions gallery spaces, there are two mirror pieces that are placed next to the windows that overlook the garden. The first here is titled Space Reversal. It's from 2007. And I understand images of this work, they're a little hard to grasp, so I'll describe it for you. Basically, you step up into this box that overlooks the garden. There's a glass in front of you that looks out. And on the floor and sides and ceiling, there are mirrors. And what ends up happening is your reflection is mirrored to infinity. You see yourself endlessly in this row of mirrors. The glimpse into the garden that is afforded by this, it really suggests the relationship between the museum and the outside, and that this work in particular is quite site-specific. This is another image of that work. Further down the hall is a work that's also a mirror piece titled Negative Quasi-Brick Wall. It's from 2003. The work is essentially a honeycomb of stainless steel quasi-bricks that have mirrored interiors. Basically, there are these three-dimensional hexagonal bricks, as the artist calls them, and the mirrors in the interior reflect both the outside world and what's in the gallery. What's interesting in comparison to the previous work that reflected yourself endlessly, when you peer into this piece, and you can, the spaces are large enough that you can kind of stick your head in. Because of the positioning of the mirrors, you never see yourself looking back. Instead, what you see are really things that may catch you off guard. You see maybe the bottom of your chin or behind your ear or the back of your head, but you never can look at yourself directly in this piece. Olafur created six new works for the exhibition at MoMA and PS1, and four of these share a very simple title, Mirror Door. Three of these are at MoMA, Mirror Door User, Mirror Door Spectator, and Mirror Door Visitor. And one is the one related piece at PS1 is Mirror Door Observer. And in essence, what the curators and artists were trying to do was create a sort of portal between the two spaces by having these related works, particularly ones that were titled Doors. And the pieces themselves all relate to the space they're in. They're opposite a door of the same size. So the mirror piece faces exactly a door of the very same size. And there's a tripod with a spotlight that projects into the mirror and casts a circular cone of light on the floor. These are actually images of the studio, so you'll see his test images before they were created here at MoMA. Because of the way the light bends when it hits the glass, it actually is in a circle when it comes out of the spotlight, but rather an elliptical shape, so that creates the perfect circle on the floor in both the space in the gallery, but as you can see, this sort of artificial dimension behind the mirror. And in a different take on artificial dimensions, this piece is 1 meter cubed light. It's from 1999. And it is made up of 24 spotlight beams that articulate the space of 1 cubic meter. It's in a dark room that's filled with fog. The illusion is quite clear. When you go into that space, you can see this cube that exists in light. However, as with all of his pieces, Olafur reveals the artifice behind the illusion. You can see the spotlights, the tripod, the lamps, the wires on the floor. Everything is present and in plain view. Still, to me, there's something quite magical about this piece and the way it just floats in midair. I was caught off a little bit off guard when, during installation, someone needed to fix something, and they just walked right through the cube. And it sort of was a little jarring because I had seen it as this whole entity, and suddenly someone just walked right through what's air and light, but it really broke that illusion for me. Next door to the Cube of Light is a much larger circular room of light. It's titled 360 Degree Room for All Colors. It's from 2002. In this space, the rounded walls emit an ever-changing glow of colors from the color spectrum. The work completely immerses you in light and color. It's similar to Room for One Color, where the light was casting the glow over the whole room and we only saw black and white. This piece also plays with perceptual effects. In an interview, the artist explains, quote, "If two people enter at different times, the mixture of the after image and the projected light will give each person a different impression of color. If you enter while the screen is blue, your eyes will produce an orange after image. If I come in while it's green, my eyes start to produce red." So what he's explaining here and interested in is the idea of individuality and that each of us have a unique experience of what we see. I can certainly attest to this. Two days ago, I was in the installation in photographs. We were taking some images, and they needed someone there to, show basically the height in space. They wanted a person in the space. So I spent an extraordinarily long time staring at it. And you start to see these perceptual patterns on your eyes, the results of an after image. And actually, in every lecture that I've seen Olafur give, he does a perceptual experiment. So I thought, in honor of that, perhaps we would, too, engage with that for a few seconds. So what I thought was we would look at the exit sign. And we'll look at that for roughly 10 seconds, and then look at one of these white spaces on the wall so that you can see the result of an after image in your eye. So if you would all just stare at the exit sign, and I'll count, and just continue to stare directly at it and keep it in the center point. Keep going. Okay, and now if you can look at one of the white surfaces, you should see a bluish square in your eyes. And so it's this sort of perceptual experience that he's referring to with that that quote, "If you enter while the screen is blue, your eyes will start to produce an orange after image." As I previously mentioned, Olafur was born in Denmark and is of Icelandic descent. He visited Iceland throughout his life. He's there all the time. And it's often mentioned that the landscape informed his use of elemental materials in his art, from light, wind, heat, earth. We've seen a few of those, the wind of the ventilator. This piece is actually incredibly warm. Another image. And this is the inside, right? And this image is sort of looking down from above, so you can see that's an actual architectural space. So in terms of the elemental interest, this is actually moss wall. It's a complete wall made of live reindeer moss. Basically, it consists of a hidden wooden and wire structure, so a chicken wire that sits off the wall about 6 inches, and it's stuffed with moss. It continues to change throughout the duration of the show. It is alive, and if you walk into the space and take a deep breath, you can smell it. It really gives off a very earthy scent. In our installation, it's actually treated so that it doesn't need to be misted. In the past, there have been times when it needs to be misted a few times a day, but it turns out they can sell moss that is pre-treated so that it does not need to be watered. It took our installers about 2 weeks, 6 installers working nonstop to stuff this wall. It was really an amazing thing to watch happen as it slowly grew. And You know, it's different in each installation, and he's used Arctic moss as well. Ours is reindeer moss. But I've seen it be very pale and yellow, and in ours it's sort of a combination of yellow and green.
Is he present for the installation?
Yes. Yes. As well as his studio members. He has, we had a team of 8 installers who were here throughout the show. So as I mentioned, there's the temperature, as you moved from the heat of the light pieces to this multi-sensory experience, the scent and sight. And as you enter the next room, it's much cooler, and you'll hear the sound of water falling. This room contains Your Strange Certainty, still kept. It's from 1996. This work consists of a tube that has water droplets that fall from the ceiling, and they're illuminated by a strobe light, which makes these droplets look like little crystals floating in midair. Again, the equipment, the water, the pipes, the lights, the basin, everything is visible, so we can understand how this piece works, but nevertheless, it's really magical, and it's quite a stunning piece.
This is upstairs.
It's in the far corner of the third floor. There's a basin, and there's a pipe along the edge, and so the water is piped back up through. There's about a 2.5 foot tall basin at the bottom. You'll notice the title of this piece is Your Strange Certainty Still Kept, and the use of your in the title is a frequent tactic that Olafur uses to encourage, again, that individual experience and the notion that the artwork is related to the viewer. It's another way to try to draw this personal relationship between you, the visitor, and the artwork. The last work at MoMA is Wall Eclipse. It's from 2004. In this work, a spotlight shines on a mirror that hangs from the ceiling and rotates on its axis at a speed of 1 revolution per minute. It's perfectly fit to the space so that it fully eclipses the wall, the shadow fully eclipses the wall, while the mirror's reflection shines light fully on the back wall. And this happens once a minute. It's really mesmerizing to watch this rotation and to see the play between light and shadow as they circle each other around the room. And we'll see some rotating mirrors at PS1 as well. So we'll cross the East River. This is PS1. And this actually is the image from PS1. We'll cross the East River. It's close. It's 2 subway stops away. I encourage you all to go. There are several reasons to have these 2 venues that made up the 1 exhibition. And one was, in particular, was the freedom that was provided by both institutions. They have a very different focus. And as such, the curators were able and the artists were able to choose works that seemed to really emphasize this practice very differently in both locations. At PS1, in particular, the institution's approach is very experimental. They show a lot of emerging artists. They show a lot of challenging pieces. And so what we thought would be interesting is to show Olafur's work in this experimental approach. There are new pieces, there are models, there are works that are studies for other works, and there are works also about the studio. And so it's a little bit more about process and experimentation in the studio at PS1. This first piece in the show, which you see right here, was specifically designed for PS1. It's 40 feet in diameter, and it's a mirror that hangs on the ceiling and slowly turns, but it's on an angle, so it very subtly shifts your sense of space as the ceiling itself reflects the gallery below. But again, it's on an angle, so it's very destabilizing. It's quite amazing to be in there with a lot of people. This only shows it as an empty gallery, which is also beautiful. As you walk in, you look for the art and realize it's up on the ceiling. On either side, oh, great, I have this image. This is a a study. It's just a diagram of how it would turn. And so this would be as though it were a film still. You can see how the image would, how the piece itself would move. On either side of this work, which incidentally was titled, incidentally, the work is titled Take Your Time, which derives from the title of the show. And this title was really important to the artist. He really wanted to think of this as a generous opportunity to give people this experience and that people should be able to, you know, really engage, take their time, move through the show at their own pace. On either side of this central piece are two rooms that contain the work Model Room, which is an ongoing piece. And again, this is such an unusual piece. I really encourage you to see it. I was at the Whitney recently, and I overheard someone talking about Olafur's show at PS1. And they said, well, first they tried to explain which show. They said, that artist, I can't pronounce his name. That Model Room, it was really like looking into his brain. And I just thought that was such a wonderful description. This Model Room consists of a collection of objects, small models, playful tests, organic items such as pine cones. There are mirrors and sculptures and elaborate wire forms, and they're really providing a glimpse into the creative process of the studio. They're showing how he and his collaborators use the studio as a laboratory for investigating materials, forms, ideas. A lot of the shapes are reminiscent of Buckminster Fuller designs, geodesic domes, scientific experiments, and other organic shapes. And within Model Room, there are actually several pieces that have emerged from these studies and have developed from the models in the room. Here's another. This is actually an image from PS1. And what you'll see, there are two lamp pieces on the left-hand side. And both of those have emerged from studies. These are both made of color, filtered glass, and they both project bands of color in different ways on the wall. In the far space, you see one of the kaleidoscopes, and I'll come back to that. But there are two kaleidoscopes in the show, which is another element of his practice that he's interested in, as well as this color spectrum print on the right-hand side, the circular print. This is a piece called Concentric Mirrors, so it was opposite of that color spectrum print which I just showed you. You can see its reflection. And this piece is made up of a circular mirror that is both bands of mirror and transparent, and then behind it there's a full mirror, and they're set at an angle to one another. So when you stand in front of the piece, it's actually like a bit of a moiré pattern. Your image is reflected back, but both at an angle and straight on through these concentric circles. This is another piece that is called the Color Spectrum series. It's from 2005. And there are 48 prints in this piece that range from the visible light spectrum, from ultraviolet to infrared. Relates quite nicely to that circular print series as well. It's printed, but I don't recall. I don't recall the actual print. They are framed, yes, they are. But how it was printed, I don't know the actual method for that one. So as I mentioned, there's two kaleidoscopes in the space. The first one, they both deal with light and color, and the first one is Sunset Kaleidoscope from 2005. What you see is installed in an open window is this elongated mirror box, and at the far end there's a yellow circular glass disc that rotates. So again, we have another rotating piece of glass. And the reflected images of the outside commingle with this image, turning it into a really brilliant kaleidoscope of what's outside. What's the name of the... This is Sunset Kaleidoscope.
Sunset.
Mm-hmm. And The location is really important, because what you see outside is obviously dependent on where it's installed. I had the opportunity to speak with the collectors of this piece, and they had asked about its installation. At PS1, it's a little bit more of an industrial location. So you see parking lots, you see streets and buildings. And it was interesting to talk with them, because when they have the piece, they have it installed looking facing their backyard. So for them, they see trees and other elements of nature. So clearly these works really depend a lot on their site. The second kaleidoscope in the exhibition is the Color Spectrum Kaleidoscope from 2003. And this is a hexagonal kaleidoscope that's made of color effect filter glass, and again provides a multicolored prismatic image of the world. It's again installed out through a window. And so, like the two mirror pieces that were at MoMA, these two kaleidoscopes provide glimpses beyond the museum to the outside environment. This is an image looking directly at the kaleidoscope. And the final work in Model Room is Inverted Berlin Sphere from 2005. It's a lamp that's made up of mirrors on the outside, and the little pieces of mirrors have a black surface. Mirrors on the inside, and the outside has a black surface. So the light is reflected out through the openings. And again, it really is something that creates patterns on the wall, takes up a full environment. It depends a lot on its installation as to how it'll be seen in Model Room. It's right next to all the models, so it really relates very closely to those wire sculptures you saw before. Here you see it on its own. It's a little more similar to the piece we had upstairs with the bands of color, the vertical bands of color on the wall. This is an image if you were to look up into the sphere. This is at PS1. In the Model Room. So also included at PS1 are Olafur's photographic works, and he's created gridded photographic suites since the early years in his career. And like the models in Model Room, often these are they're both artworks and studies for other works. And he takes his photographs while on his trips to Iceland, so all of the images are Iceland. And he focuses on glaciers and rivers, islands and caves, and other features of the country's landscape. So this is islands, caves, horizon. A cave series. This is called Jokla. It's the longest river in Iceland. This is a recent piece, a glacier piece. Photographs is a room made up of what are these soil quasi-bricks. They are hardened bricks made of earth that are in these angular shapes installed on the walls. They're actually, I think of them as an inverse of the negative quasi-brick wall that we discussed earlier here at MoMA, the one that was like the honeycomb with mirrored interiors. These are a bit smaller, but they're much more dense. There's a much different feel as you enter the space. It's quieter, it's cooler, you're surrounded by earth on the walls. But again, it's the same shape and form, these quasi-bricks that surround you on the space. There are also, at PS1, three adjacent rooms that all deal with white light and projection. The first is titled Reimagine from 2002. And there are seven spotlights that cast shifting and overlapping rectilinear patterns across the gallery wall, which create these illusions of depth. All of the spotlights are visible behind you. And again, there's that transparency of how things are made. And yet there's really a sense of depth that's created in this flat surface. And the lights themselves go on and off slowly. So you'll create ever-changing patterns on the wall. In the next space at PS1, you see the mirror door that relates to the three that are at MoMA. This is, in fact, an installation at PS1. And again, it's a spotlight projected onto the mirror that is perfectly sized to the door behind it. Interestingly, at PS1, as you stand right here and look at it, it actually feels like you can see behind, because what you see is the complete reflection of the circle sort of behind the mirror. It's because of the reflection, the way your eye sees in the mirror reflecting these pieces. But it's a complete circle that seems to be made up. It's really an amazing illusion that happens. Oh, this is the mirror. And the spotlight, this is the door behind it that's the same size. So this is the reflection, and this is actually the spotlight, this. In the same room as this mirror door, there is a work that I mentioned before. It's titled Wannabe from 1991, the earliest work in the show. And this piece is simply a spotlight that hangs down from the ceiling and casts a single cone of light onto the floor. You can pass in, walk out. In its first installation, it was actually installed in a cafe in Copenhagen when he was a student. The third work in this row is titled The Natural Light Setup. It's another new piece. The ceiling is essentially a light box that emits different hues of white light in a pre-programmed rhythm. I'll show you a few examples. What I found to be really interesting is that when I entered the space on my own, I almost couldn't see anything. It's a light box on the ceiling, but it's subtle. And then when I was in there later and I was with somebody else, suddenly I had a point of reference. And so the white light became very apparent to me because I was with someone and I could see how it was changing and the effect on them. When I was by myself, it was very difficult. It was very difficult to see the shifts in light. I think it's actually a beautiful reference as well to the James Turrell piece, which is at PS1, where the ceiling opens up and you have the sky above. And this one is artificial light coming from above, and the other one would be natural sky. But
is it James Turrell there now?
It's permanently installed there. Mm-hmm. Which it opens, I believe, at dusk every night. So lastly, at PS1, there are two water pieces. The first is Reversed Waterfall. It's from 1998. And this is the piece installed outside, not at PS1, but an earlier installation. Combining the natural and the artificial, this system of pumps reverses the flow of water and sends the water streaming upwards. This is actually the piece installed at PS1. I think it's really wonderful that this piece will be on simultaneous to the New York City Waterfalls project that's happening this summer in the East River. And it may even be considered a prototype for that, even though this one is going up, and those are much larger. It's sort of similar to his model room, where he makes work and then he's rethinking about it and rethinking it. And so in this example, you have this waterfall, which is a piece, but he's creating on a much larger scale this summer, these much bigger waterfalls in the river itself, but of course they flow down, they don't flow up. And finally, at PS1, and you might have to hunt to find this piece, it's in their basement in what's called the vault. This piece is called Beauty. It's from 1993. And a spotlight shines obliquely through a curtain of fine mist that's falling from the ceiling in a room that's otherwise dark. This is not PS1's installation, but it's similar. It's a fully dark room. It's black walls. As what happens is you see a rainbow, and as the viewer moves around the work, it shifts according to your perception and your position. And the artist's intention is to, quote, create an awareness for our movements and to integrate these into the exhibition in a way that allows us to perceive what we know and to know what we perceive. He feels very strongly that the encounter between the visitor and the space is central. And as such, his goal is really to promote an active engagement with the art that really enables us to see ourselves seen. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions you might have about the exhibition, or the first practice, any of the works in particular. This is at PS1. Of course, I spoke about it in the beginning because it's the first piece here, but I can actually, oops, never mind. The fan is it's titled Ventilator from 1997, and it's a fan that hangs from the ceiling of the space and is propelled by its own motion. Yes, by its own motion through, yeah. In each site, it has to be modified a little bit differently. Like a normal fan, there's different speeds. So for us, we chose a speed that was relative to the weight of the cord that it's on. We actually did try two different thickness
cords. It makes it
cords.
Sound self-aware.
Yes, it's propelled on its own. Yeah. So at times it's very slow, and times it's really quite fast. It's in the atrium here, if you'd like to see it. Yes.
You spoke about how he had formal artistic training, and
yeah.
He has a lab or a group of
yes.
people, scientists included. I'm just wondering, did he have any formal scientific training himself? Because it's all about science.
Yeah, he is a really avid reader and really engaged with a lot of different communities. As far as I know, academically, he studied art. But with that said, he reads a really wide range of things and is really engaged with those people. So recently, there was a symposium at Columbia called The Colors of the Brain. And it was related to color and architecture. And there was a physicist there who spoke about string theory, and there was architects who were there speaking about their practice. And so he really does engage with a wider community, and he is very interested in science and perception in particular. Yes.
Is there any proportion? Are they more scientists than artists?
No, I don't know the proportions exactly. The most of whom I've met are installers and have that background, because I'm working with them. Were there other questions in the back?
I know that going down to the subway station across the street, there's
yeah.
models of
yes.
some of his work.
Mm-hmm.
Are any of those pieces on view?
A lot of them actually are not. They're images from the studio. The Take Your Time image you'll see in the subway stations quite a bit. There are other glass pieces and light projections. They're not all even final artworks. They're more like models. So it was a little bit more in the public realm of that space, showing something that was an experimentation. Yeah. The studio is in Berlin.
Where do you go to school?
In Copenhagen, the Royal Academy of Arts there.
I think I was really taken by the Glacier series at PS1,
mm-hmm.
and I'm wondering if he is involved in activism at all.
Very active. He actually has his own, he's very socially active, both in environmental and social issues. He has a foundation, Ethiopia 121, or 121 Ethiopia, I forget which way it is, but He raises a lot of money for that nonprofit, but he is also very interested in environmental work, and he's very active in that capacity as well.
Did you meet him?
Oh yeah, we worked very closely on the show. He We came here several times before the show opened, planning with the curators. He was very involved in the process. And because this work depends so much on space and architecture, he's incredibly involved because architecture can be modified as need be for any show. And so he was really here working with the curators, thinking through the process. He came here throughout the installation as well, in addition to his team of installers. And he's in New York quite a bit these days with the Waterfalls project as well. Hi.
Yeah, I want to know, you said that they added a few pieces to the New York show.
Yes.
What were the main differences between the show in San Francisco?
Sure. The show in San Francisco was about 22 pieces. We took 14 of them and then added 26 pieces. So it's pretty different in its presentation. Again, we had these two very different spaces, six new works, the mirror pieces, the ceiling, and both ceiling pieces, the Take Your Time, the big mirror, and the natural light setup ceiling. So it was quite different. Again, his works are so dependent upon the space they're in that probably in each installation you'll have a very different experience of the works. Yes.
Have you ever shown the Turbine Hall, the tape, anywhere else, or was that it?
No, not that. No, that was its first installations. Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Are you? I'm a modern teacher, and I'm bringing kids to MoMA, but I do go to PS1, and in some ways, I really kind of think that the kids would get more out of the PS1 because of the model room and seeing like things. Where did these big concepts come from? Mm-hmm. And stuff like that. I haven't really looked on the website of MoMA yet, but do you guys have curriculum or, you know, like visual art lesson plans?
There is one brochure that's created for kids that's here at MoMA. Otherwise, I don't think there's a specific lecture plan. I honestly, I'm not sure which space would be more ideal. It's amazing to watch children here. They chase after the ventilator. They can't get over the colors of their clothes in the room for one color. It's very captivating, all the light projections here, but I agree the model room is really an amazing piece. Yes.
I used to say one other thing I can't wait. But I walked through the show and I saw the
Basically, what that piece is, these are lights that are used actually on the highways in Europe. It helps increase your visual acuity. It's emitted at such a narrow frequency that you can really only see the yellow or black and white. And as you look beyond the space, because of the perceptual effects, everything seems to have this purplish, bluish hue beyond the space. So it's amazing, but it needs to be in a space where there's not, where you take away the other light sources. It needs to...
Just that light source. Mm-hmm. Everyone looked like it was like a black and white. Color.
Yeah, yeah. Yes.
And Take Your Time is given especially for MoMA exhibit?
It's the title of the show at large. Yeah. The traveling exhibition is it's all one title from San Francisco here.
But wasn't it, I thought you said it was title of that piece.
It is. Specifically for PS1. It's true. He made that piece specifically for PS1 and then he titled it the same as the show. Well, thank you.
Thank you
very much.